I'm with Elaine Ayagada, and we're just talking about her manuscript, I Was the Shy One. And Elaine, you talk about your Aunt Ada and how she was very sick as a child, and she really should have died. But why don't you tell us about what happened to your aunt?
Yeah, well, that's pretty powerful because, if you know any doctors, they really don't forget their first miracle, that they see. It's something to behold. It's not explainable by man. It's not explainable by science, and that's why they classify it as a miracle. Even if you're not a doctor, you really remember a miracle. They're memorable. They're out of this world, and they're really just a God wink and a gift from God. I've had a couple in my health, completely. I've definitely cheated death a couple times. So I have empathy, in this section of our discussion, not just sympathy or an understanding. But when Auntie was little, and again, this is 1912, okay? This is 1912. Antibiotics, I mean, just medicine, it was just, it's not what it was. In those days, if there was a fatal virus, what they typically did was one of two things. They pulled everything out of the house and burned it in the yard, literally, to contain the virus. Or they burned the house down to the foundation and with the furniture in it and built it again.
Wow.
And it's odd, it's amazing because my girlfriend Deirdre was saying, Elaine, there were like six different foundations added on to my great grandparents' place because with the different viruses that happened, they burned the house down like five times and to contain the virus. So again, this is 1912. So when you get a virus in 1912, it's a diagnosis that's fatal, it's a big deal. So they pulled everything out of the house and burned it. But Auntie was sent as a child to a death ward. Typically, and they came in with like, looks like space suits on, white gauze wrapped, space suits. And, even if they attended to her in it with a rag, they threw it in a pile to be burned. It was just, they did what they needed to and they got out. It was just like, it just, and she was in quarantine. And I remember writing her story. And I remember in 2019, this is before COVID. And, in the fall of 2019, I got finished writing this manuscript. And I just remember going, this is a little far-fetched. I'm expecting people in 2019 to understand what quarantine is. When my father didn't endure one, I didn't endure one. However, 6 months later, the whole planet would be in lockdown, facing COVID and the death that COVID brought in 2020. It was just, a good friend of mine in Belmont died of COVID in 2020. I mean, it was just, if you got it in 2020, it was almost a death sentence. And so for the first time in my life, I'm like, the manuscript was being read by some literary agents who then were in a quarantine from COVID. And not only was it realistic to them, I wrote it in 2019 when a quarantine was completely far-fetched, but I wrote her story accurately to what she told me. And however, it got to be quite known what a quarantine is. And today, clearly, we know what one is, self-isolating, whatever. But I mean, as a child who's got debilitating shyness to get, scarlet fever and chicken pox, they were both fatal. And nowadays, you're like, really? Yes. In 2000, in 1912, it was a big deal. And when she got both of them, it was a guaranteed death. So when she escaped a death she knew she should have had, when she got those, they pulled everything out of the house and burned it. At the time where they were going back to Europe for better paying jobs, because they really couldn't, make it happen in America. So her family's gone. She's naked in a death ward, expected to die. It's not even a question. Just expected to die, being treated like somebody who is dying. And it was painful. The beginning of the manuscript has an incredible amount of suffering, an incredible amount of suffering, and the miracle. And then the miracle that the doctor had never seen, that the nurses had never seen. And she has to learn to walk again. She's skeletal and she's just, wow. So that's really powerful because here's a debilitatingly shy kid that all this is happening to, and she's in the care of strangers, and has no clothes, and is naked in America with no family, coming out of a guaranteed death, receives a miracle, and makes her way back. It's really the beginning of the manuscript is really powerful because, again, that's almost a movie in a movie. You know, that's a story in a story. This is powerful to see somebody overcoming. But what it does is it makes a phenomenal relationship with her and the nurses, but in particular her and her doctor. You know, he's a great guy, and he's just astonished at what he sees. And then he's just, she's a delightful kid. So they build a relationship easily and organically, and it's just it's architected really beautifully. And then he drives through Connecticut in his convertible, driving her to the pier to load her on the boat. And again, that scene when they're leaving each other, she, you know, they go up the ramp and they're leaving each other. It's just, it's one of the most powerful scenes in the whole story. It just is. It was powerful when she would always say it. It rendered me hysterical when I was writing it. It really did. I thought I was damaging my keyboard from just being hysterical all over it. I was like, but I just, and it even now when you read it, it really evokes, it evokes something deep, you know. It just, it brings it right up. It percolates it right up like coffee. It's just really powerful. It's a powerful story. And yeah, it's just, it's a great story of overcoming. It really is. But when you escape death that you know you should have had, it's actually happened to me a couple of times in my life, ironically. And you look at like life differently. She did. She did. I think it made fertile soil for the seeds of her overcoming her shyness, made the soil very fertile because you look at life differently. It is different. It's like going over a speed bump you didn't know was there. If you've ever driven over a speed bump at a decent speed, hello. So when you should die and you don't, it really is supposed to reshuffle your deck. It really should, and that's the beauty of it. It makes you value things you might not have valued before, and it did with her. So the back end of surviving something like that has a just an amazing beauty to it. You are a different person, and you know it. You are on borrowed time, and you did just receive a gift from God, and you know it. So it's kind of cool, you know, in that aspect. And that's how she gets on the boat, just with this, those seeds are right there. Those seeds are right there. Amazingly so. You know, a few nights later, it's just, it's a beautiful story. It's just a beautiful story, the way it just naturally opens up, you know.
And when she meets these people from the Titanic, they also cheated death.
It's funny because this is a kid that should have died, and they're on a boat that shouldn't have sunk. So that it just, it's really, it's ironic. It's just ironic, you know. And honestly, the sad part about the Titanic was some of those little things they got into were collapsible, almost canvas. They were collapsible, and there was a tremendous current that if you happen to row, what's the right direction? If you happen to row in the wrong direction, you caught a very powerful current that put you up into Nova Scotia. I mean, there's a graveyard up in Canada that's completely dedicated to survivors that washed up, you know, badly decomposed, you know, from that night. So again, just because you were in one of these collapsibles, only one of the lifeboats even had a light, it just was so tragic. Many of them weren't filled. There's so many woulda, coulda, shoulda. But again, you know, here's Molly Brown. You know, here's General Astor, John Jacob Astor, the richest man on the planet, the richest man on the planet, who dies on a ship that was unsinkable. You know, I think that when you fly in the face of God and say something is unsinkable, I don't know, that's never a great idea, in my opinion. You just don't fly in the face of God. You know, so I mean, man, you know, has been arrogant in the past, and that was clearly a really arrogant statement. So it is amazing when she meets Molly. That's another incredibly powerful, you know, scene She meets Molly. They're a two from two different walks of life, but they have so much in common. And that's actually an amazing scene when she meets Molly. Many of the places, the dining halls that the boat had to be able to, enjoy their food on the Carpathia were turned to hospitals. I think only one was a place where you could eat. So the food lines were really big when the Titanic, 704 people from the Titanic came on board. And to avoid the food lines, one time she goes up early in the morning on deck, and there's a lone Molly Brown, drinking a scotch. And as a kid, you don't realize she's just marinated in an amazing dose of PTSD. But the empathy that she brings to that scene, where is the fear? She had no fear because she had something to say, because she just escaped death. So she understands and brought that to the table. And that's one of the most powerful scenes in the boat. Her relating to Molly Brown as a giant of a woman. She's just a giant in those days. She was in every newspaper that was ever written. She was the belle of the ball. She was the darling of everything. She was the nouveau riche. She was just a real character, but she was just flatlined with what just happened. And, John Astor was an incredibly good friend of hers, and she lived and he didn't. And so it's just a powerful scene when Ada walks up and meets her in complete empathy. And they're really an odd couple. And what happens from that point on is incredibly beautiful and really historically significant. And she's able to help Molly, which, go figure, here's this kid that didn't even have her own underwear a couple of days early, was just really, and she's on a boat helping Molly Brown, who's having scotch for breakfast. It's a really cool, it really is. It just is. She invites her down to her room, for Oreos, and she likes the mint from the Whitman sampler, because when you inhale, it just makes your mouth like a just it, it you got to see how this kid approaches this icon, and is the fear isn't even part of it's not even an element. It's not even an element. Because she meets her at the point where they both should have died, and they both knew it, and yet they didn't. Powerful. Powerful.
Wow. All right. Thank you so much, Elaine.
You're welcome so much.